You're listening to Anita Marks on 98.7 ESPN.
Welcome in. Another edition on the tee with Anita Marks, John Mascari, Christina Thompson, and of course you. We appreciate that you listen to the podcast, you download the podcast, all things golf, as the three of us look back and forward. And this week we look back at the Workday Charity Open that took place at Muirfield Village, same place that is hosting the Memorial. We're going to get into all that this week. And Morikawa, he outlasted Justin Thomas, who some would phrase it as wetting the bed in those last three playoff holes. So, John, let's start with you. Listen, I love Morikawa. He's just his game is on point. His swing is beautiful, and he just looks like, I've never met him, obviously, but he just looks like, and when he speaks, like a really good young man, like something that's really good for the tour, somebody that you can really get behind and really cheer for and really like. So I'm thrilled with this win. And I love that we had three playoff holes, even though I was in the middle of a hike and I was following the playoff holes on my ESPN app. I didn't watch it in live time, but nonetheless, you know, this is another week that we're still getting good golf, if not great golf, after their pandemic pause. John, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there. He had a great golf. You look at Morikawa, second PGA Tour win for him for the 23-year-old. He's now jumped up to number 13th in the world golf rankings, one above Mr. Tiger Woods. This was a big stepping stone for him. You know, he gets that first win out of the way. Now it's two. Now that could just start building and building. He's a great face for the game. And you know what? You know, it was an interesting final round. It was kind of had ebbs and flows. And if you remember back when he lipped out to force a playoff, and then he had that two-footer here again, just off the edge, but this time it fell in. You know, shades of his last his second place finish, I believe it was at the Travelers where he came in second.
I believe it was the Travelers. John, how hard is that? That, you know, mentally you go into a playoff and then now you're like, oh no, here we go again. Hopefully that doesn't happen to me again. How do you keep that out of your head, out of your mind? How do you refocus and say, that was then, this is now, I got this?
If he told you that it wasn't in his head, I think he would be lying. I think he had to have that in the back of his head. You know, let's talk about how his career has been pretty much positive for the most of it. I mean, came out, he won the Barracuda Championship last summer. He always seems to be in contention. I don't know about you. I always feel like I see his name on the leaderboard. He missed that putt at the Colonial. I'm sorry, it was the Colonial, not the Travelers. And then a few shaky putts before it. And then that was really it on his resume. And then here he is with a chance to force a playoff. And can you imagine if that was just like a millimeter off and it lips out again? Now we're talking about, this could change the whole scope of this guy's career, or at least his year, where he could be known as the guy who misses short putts that mean something. And boy, that hole starts to get smaller and smaller and smaller the more of those you miss. And that puts so much pressure on you. But what could have been a nightmare turned into something positive. He didn't shatter his confidence. And he was holding the trophy at the end. So good on him.
I feel like each and every week it's like a birdie fest in all these tournaments, right, Christina? Your thoughts on what you saw, what you walked away with from the Workday Charity Open?
Well, there's a couple things. So first and foremost, I mean, this is one of those events that, I mean, obviously next week it's going to be weird to watch Memorial without having any fans because, you know, there have been so many epic shots at Memorial. But what I noticed, you know, when I'm watching the playoff and you're watching those two guys out there, you know, Justin Thomas, he's hitting that, you know, 50-foot birdie putt that, you know, was just so beautiful. And then, you know, he's all excited. I just was imagining what it would have been like if there was a gallery there because that would have been such one of those defining putts. But then, you know, Morikawa turns around and he drains that 24-foot you know, birdie putts. So again, it was just like back to back birdies, but not just like little birdies. I mean, these were like epic shots that were really defining the tournament. So it was, that was some really good golf. I mean, golf is always so exciting, like the last few holes anyway, but they really put on a show for us. And it's also good, you know, these two guys like each other, they're friends. So I think that was enjoyable to watch. I'm sure they enjoyed playing together as well, but yeah, it was good golf, and it was definitely enjoyable to watch. So
this week now, players don't have to go anywhere. They don't have to board a flight. They don't have to travel. They continue to stay in this very safe, hopefully a safe bubble in Dublin, Ohio. But the course changes, right? And a little bit later on in the podcast, John Mascari has an interview with the head pro at Murrayville Village, Larry Dornich. So you want to stay tuned for that. We're going to play that interview at the end of this podcast. So stay tuned for that. And so, John, since you have already spoken to Larry, and I know you guys talked about how the course is going to change, again, what I'm reading, faster greens going from 11 to 13s. It's going to be longer. They're moving the tees back. They're letting the rough grow. Like, what were some of the other things that Larry shared with you?
Yeah, so, you know, one of the things was this golf course is widely known as one of the more favorable golf courses on the tour by the players. They love the ability to play there. They love the golf course. And they had to make it look like another golf course this past week. So the first thing they did was they moved some tees around. You know, holes that are usually longer became shorter, and holes that are usually shorter became longer, and dog legs were softened, and dog legs were sharpened up a little bit. And as you said, Anita, the greens became a lot slower. And you would think, well, why would you make the greens slower on a PGA Tour event? And here's why. They put the pin positions in places that they normally are not. So you have the ability to have a more hole locations with slower greens because the ball can hold and players can attack the pins, even if they're in tucked in corners or behind hazards. If you put these pin positions there with 13 and 14 stimp meter readings, these guys would be putting forever. Even the best tour players can't get close to the hole. So they slowed the greens down. They put the pins tucked in corners. Also to save areas for this week. Okay, so we're going to put a front left pin position on Sunday on 5 because we're going to be back right for the Memorial next week. So the superintendent and his greens and grounds crew did a great job of kind of quadranting off the greens to keep them healthy, to keep them playable for this week and the week before. I mean, let's think about it. 2 PGA Tour events in back-to-back weeks is a lot of stress on a golf course. Kudos to his staff. They're going to do a great job. The golf course is going to look awesome as usual. And they'll go right back to their traditional high rough, great pin locations, and a great course setup that the tour players know and love this weekend at the Memorial.
So, you know, again, like we saw the guys who did well this past week. By the way, Jerry Kelly, I told you, top 40, finished like tied for 18. Can I get some love? Woo-hoo! Can I get some love with my Jerry Kelly pick? Thank you. Thank you. That was 8-1. 8-1 finishing the top 40.
Right. I was giving you a hard time last week about the 8-1. Like, you had to put $100 down to really make it worth your while.
But I'm just saying, like, that's a, like, put, I'm probably I'm down? Probably I'm probably more proud of my I'm probably more proud of my Jerry Kelly finishing in the top 40, and then he finishes like I think he's like tied for 18, than I am for any win that I predicted.
Just let me ask you this: are you going to ride him?
Like, he's a diamond in the rough. Who the hell knows who Jerry Kelly is? No, who? Exactly.
Who?
Who? What?
I'm happy what? To see Poulter back up there. He's
Ian Poulter. Yeah.
I got to tell you, I kind of, you know, I know everyone rolls their eyes with him, but he's been playing great, and it's been fun to see him the last few tournaments. So I know this is, you know, his first go. He hasn't played this course. I mean, I think it's been, like they said, 11 years he's played, so he's back. But it was good to see him get a top 5 with my boy Gary Woodland. So it was, you know.
I love how you call him your boy.
My boy?
Yeah.
We had a boy.
He's a lot of people's boy right now. Twitter posting and all sorts of
things. So it'll be interesting to see how they carry it over to this week.
So here's my question for those that are listening to this podcast and are going to wager, listen to us and try to pick some DFS players. Not wise, right? To like just automatically assume the guys who did well this past week are going to do well this week because of how many changes we're going to see with the tournament, right?
I don't know. I think there's some guys that could just kind of build off the confidence of playing this golf course the same time again.
Yeah,
listen, a lot of these guys are creatures of habit, and you're setting them up for 2 weeks in the same place. They're staying at the same room or the same house. They're hitting balls in the same range for two straight weeks. They're practicing on the course.
Yeah,
I think a couple of repeat offenders.
There's a lot of big names that weren't out. Who do you think is going to repeat? Who do you think you'll see another who's going to play well again? You think Justin Thomas again? You think he'll be back up there?
Yeah, I think Justin Thomas is going to play well. I think Patrick Cantlay, who's the former champion, is a good bet at 14-1. You know, going a little deeper down, Joaquin Niemann's 66-1. I love John Rahm this week.
I mean, we also have to remember we have Tiger Effect, so Tiger will be in the field. So
I'm not spending a penny on Tiger.
No.
I think this is a let me get my feet wet. I think you know, players talked about how weird it is not having a gallery.
Yeah.
He had the biggest gallery of anyone for the past decade. And he's not going to have a gallery now at all. I'm not spending a penny.
Hold on a second. So
I disagree. I think he's going to show.
He's the most introverted person.
He loves.
You would think the no crowd and the quarantine is right up his alley.
Or being near him.
You would think. Christina, bottle of wine. How about this, Christina? Bottle of wine. Tiger doesn't make the cut.
100%. I'll take that bet.
Okay.
He loves the course.
I know. He's won here five times. I get it. I just think this is his first tour stop since the pandemic. It's a whole new world. John, you're the only one out of us who have kids. What is that? It's a whole new world. Is that Frozen?
I'm unfamiliar with that.
Lion King?
Is it Lion King?
I think you're a little off key, Anita. Maybe can you get it in a little better key?
Whatever. So.
But yeah, let's take that bet. Done.
I say Tiger doesn't make the cut.
Tiger makes the cut.
Okay, so here are the guys that I like. Schauffele to win it, 25-1. I love Abraham Answer, 50-1. Dude is on point right now. Approach shots. So really quick, the analytics to win here this week, the metrics. Strokes gained tee to green. Strokes gained on approach. Strokes gained greens in regulation, percentage, par three scoring, par five scoring, driving accuracy, sand saves, and putting on bent grass. When you look at the rankings with all the golfers in those metrics, Answer's name keeps on coming up in the top 50. I love Answer to win this 50-1.
Really?
I do.
That's not a bad bet. At 50-1, I think it's worth taking a stab there. I love Tony Finau at 65-1.
Yes.
He's still a top 20 player in the world. 65-1 to win this thing.
Have you guys seen the video out of him?
I have.
Oh, Christina, you haven't seen it?
Oh, of what?
It's kind of like, oh, DeChambeau, you can do this. Look what I can do. He's like crushing the ball. He took
365 off the tee.
He took the week off and he worked on some things, and him and his coach were posting these videos on social media and they went viral. So I have Tony Finau finishing in the top 20 at plus 250. Here's some other guys that I like. I've got DeChambeau, Webb Simpson, and Cantlay finishing in the top five. I got Daniel Berger finishing the top 10. I have Paul Casey and Finau in the top 20. I have Lucas Glover in the top 30. And I have Furyk, Merritt, and Doc Redman in the top 40. Those are the guys, those are the dudes I like.
I like all those. I would certainly throw John Rahm in there.
See, I have John Rahm not making the cut.
I think he's got a chip on his shoulder.
Would you like to make a wager with me as well, John?
Yeah, I'm already up a bottle of wine from last week. So, yeah, I'll press it up. It's all good.
Okay. All right. So, bottle of wine. So, I've got a bottle of wine with Christina that Tiger doesn't make the cut. And I got a bottle of wine with you that John Rahm doesn't make the cut.
I'm not going to buy a bottle of wine for 6 months with this show.
You're funny.
So wait, let me hear. What about Rory? No one's thinking about Rory. I mean, he's had a little bit of a break, so I'm sure he'll be nice and refreshed and ready to win. Thoughts?
It's 14-1 for Rory. I mean, like, that's, I don't know. I wouldn't touch him.
No, okay.
That's just me.
I'm not touching him. But how about this? Yeah. Tiger, Rory, and Brooks Koepka. That's the threesome on Thursday. How about who's? That's appointment television.
Yes.
How can you not?
Yes. Like,
that's like take off work. You got to watch that.
Yes. Although I'm not gonna lie, I kind of would have liked to see DeChambeau and Koepka together on the weekend.
Well, hopefully
during the week.
Hopefully that's what we'll have on the weekend. How great would that be?
I'll watch that.
DeChambeau is still in a great group with Morikawa and Patrick Cantlay. So I would certainly call that a featured group as well.
John, do you have the tee times? Do you know when they're teeing off?
I don't have them in front of me. They start at 7 a.m. I know that. I would think these guys are later on in the day. Mickelson, Rose, and Lowry together. Yeah. We said Rory, Tiger, and Koepka. How about Justin Thomas, Schauffele, and Dustin Johnson? See, like, that's where I would have put John Rahm in that group instead of Schauffele.
Yeah.
That should have been Thomas, Rahm, and DJ. The guy's the number two ranked player in the world.
Yeah.
He's playing with a couple of schlubs, I think.
Yeah, I'm not interested in that one.
He's not playing like the number two player in the world, though, John.
Don't matter.
All right.
Number two is number two.
I'm into Côte d'Aron and Château du Pape.
Château du Pape.
All right, let's end on this. Let's end on some Tiger news. Tiger came out and said that the reason that he hasn't been participating in the tour is because he just wanted to sit back. He wanted to see how the tour was going to handle COVID-19, and his health and his safety was more important. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem
spending
with
time
that.
With his kids, and you know.
Well, he didn't say that. He said he just wanted to sit back and to see how the tour was going to handle COVID-19.
Yeah. Listen, I don't believe that for 1 second.
Why?
You don't?
No.
I don't believe that.
So why do you why do you think this is the first time we're seeing Tiger?
Because I think he feels confident about his golf game.
Really? You think it's definitely golf game related? Like,
of course.
I'm laying low. These guys are out there, you know.
They played at the same golf course this past week. If he was feeling really good, he should have played last week.
All right.
Just saying.
Okay.
I have high hopes for Tiger. I'm hoping Tiger comes out strong.
You better, because you're going to owe me a bottle of wine.
This is an unbelievable field. I don't know if you guys.
Listen, Tiger. You know, I watched his interview the other day, and you know, he went in. He was talking. He had a lot of good questions, and they were talking to him about what was that?
Nothing. I'm just listening attentively.
I lost my connection.
What? Wait. What? Are you not going to finish what you were going to say?
I just lost my connection. I'm back. I've got technical difficulties.
Welcome
today.
Back.
So I was
watching. Pay that Verizon bill.
So I was watching Tiger's interview, and you know, he was talking about, you know, his time off and, you know, what he was doing. And yeah, like you said, he was watching the tour to see how they were going to handle COVID. And, but like John said earlier, Tiger's such an introvert. I think he gets into that tunnel mode and he doesn't even see anybody around him. So I think when he gets to a tournament, he's there by himself. But this time, you know, normally Tiger has such a posse around him. He's got family, he's got trainers, he's got therapists. I mean, he's got an entire squad that travels with him. So I'm going to believe that that squad is going to be a lot smaller. But, you know, again, he's not going to have fans reaching out. He's not going to have people screaming Baba Booey on his swing, you know, get in the hole on a par five. So I think all the, those distractions that are out there are not going to be there. And I think Tiger's going to show up. I think he's just going to play some really good golf and give us some great highlights, maybe, you know, chip in for eagle again like he did back in 2018.
You're trying to will it to happen. That's what's happening.
You are. It's not gonna work.
Here's another thing. The tour came out and said no fans for the remainder of the season, which, listen, outside of where we live, where we're feeling really safe right now compared to, you know, the petri dish we existed in for the first 3 months in March, April, and May. COVID's on the rise. So I think even though this is obviously a large sum of money that is being lost by the tour, I think this is the right decision to make. What do you guys think?
Hands down, the right decision. It's certainly not worth the risk of a major outbreak from a PGA Tour event so that fans could come and watch. Let me tell you something. In all honesty, it's more enjoyable to watch at home. I mean, let's be honest. It's good to be out there live with the golfers.
It's a different experience, John.
I understand, but you getting the same experience watching the tour on TV at home. There's no way I would let fans out. And I'm sorry. Let the year run out. Let's figure this whole thing out.
Yeah.
And then the crowds will come back, hopefully bigger and better than ever. So they can.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, listen, these guys are taking this very seriously. These guys have also a lot of money. This is their career. They're not going to want to screw this up either. And I don't believe they're going to want others to come into their bubble to screw it up for them either. So I think they're also supporting the no fan factor. I mean, this is why they postponed the Ryder Cup, because they do know like events like that need to have fans, and that's a fan tournament. But you know, these events, you know, I think they definitely made the right decision. And I think it keeps the safe and the health of all of those involved with the tour safe. And they're traveling into some crazy spots, too. So, I don't know.
God forbid someone sneezes on Patrick Reed. I mean, well, wait a second. Maybe someone should sneeze on Patrick. Maybe.
Oh, John.
That is
Jonathan,
shade.
Jonathan.
I'm sorry. It's very serious.
Christina, very interesting, because the three of us are in agreement that it's wise for the tour not to have fans, but that's not the case with the LPGA tour. So why do you feel, kind of bring us up to speed on what they're doing? When are fans going to be able to attend their tournaments, and why do you think they've made that decision?
You know, it's a great question. I mean, but I think at the end of the day, it comes down to resources. The LPGA and the PGA Tour have different financial resources, money backing them. The LPGA really does need, you know, needs more support. I spoke to tour player Marina Alex yesterday, and we were talking about her return to the tour, and she had mentioned to me that, you know, the first tournament of the season is going to be without pro-ams. There's going to be no spectators, but at Marathon, which is happening the very next week, also in Ohio, they are actually allowing spectators, as well as they will be doing a pro-am. And, you know, it's a little nerve-wracking. It's a little scary. I mean, and they don't have the same, they're not living in that same bubble that the PGA has set up for the LPGA Tour. And I think it does come down to money, and it comes down to what they can and what they need in order to put a tournament together. So some of the players, you know, have mentioned in some conversations I've had that, you know, listen, they're going to do the best that they can, and the tour is doing whatever they can do to keep the players safe. But at the same time, they will be having fans, and Marathon is the only event right now that is slated to have spectators. But when the girls do head over to England or to Scotland for the British Open and the Scottish Open, they got player exemptions with the government. So as you know, if you travel overseas, you're not allowed to, you have to quarantine for 2 weeks if you do overseas. But the players are going to be going over to Scotland, and they're only allowed to bring one person. So they're all bringing their caddies, and that's it. So there will be no fans at the Open. There will be no other additional posse there. So it's going to be, you know, they've shut it all down. They want this event to happen. But the LPGA has to take a different approach to the tour this year. So it'll be interesting to see how those first two events go, because that is going to really decide how the rest of the and the remainder of the domestic events happen. And I have a feeling that either events will not happen, or they will continue at like the PGA with no fans. So it'll be interesting to see. So I just hope everybody stays safe. And I do know there was, I think, only one player, LPGA player, that had COVID, was diagnosed with COVID, and it was Carlotta Segonda. She was a Solheim. She's a Solheim Cup player. So she was in Arizona. So she will be missing the first few events. So I just hope everyone can stay safe.
I'm willing to go out on a limb and say that they're going to change that and not let fans in that event. I think enough people are either going to say something, or players are going to say, I'm not playing. If you're letting fans in, I'm not playing. And that will make the LPGA change their decision very quickly.
Yeah.
Inherently, the crowds are going to be smaller at an LPGA event anyway. I mean, if it were normal times, they're not going to have the same draw as the PGA member at PGA tour. So maybe that's what they're thinking, is just inherently it's a smaller crowd. But again, it goes back to the risk of, you know, here you are as one of the sports that's actually doing well, and you're managing this and you're getting great ratings and your sponsorships are still buying airtime, and don't go messing it up by having to let people come in. It's not worth it.
I know. Yeah, it should be interesting, you know, but I think it's going to be great for the tour, because there is not a lot of sports, so it will be great to be able to have the LPGA out there. I hope there's a lot of bets. You know, I've been trying to see, you know, what the odds are for the LPGA, so it'll be fun to be able to bet on some LPGA events.
Last but not least, guys, before we in the podcast, HBO is going to release a two-part documentary series on Tiger Woods. It's not going to be released until December 13th, so it's still ways away. But it is the rise, the fall, and the epic comeback of Tiger Woods. And apparently a lot of video, especially from his former caddy, that has never been seen before. So keep an eye out for that. Again, HBO, two-part series. This is the thing now, right? Like, first it was, you know, MJ, and then Tom Brady's getting a documentary done. Now Tiger's getting a documentary done. Like, this is like, you know.
It's the answer. Listen, what's the number one type of programming on TV before the COVID?
Yeah, I mean, these are.
No, reality TV. Now there's no reality TV because people can't be inside. They're not filming reality. So they've got to fill it with these documentaries. And expect to see a lot more of them. I can't wait to see this one. I think it's going to be really cool.
Yeah.
And boy, it should be interesting to relive the roller coaster ride that he has had within the last 7 or 8 years.
Guys, thank you so much for tonight. I appreciate you. Again, Christina Thompson from Golf for Her. Log on, check out her clothing line and her company. She also has a store in Denville. And of course, John Mascari, head pro at Alpine Country Club. I'm Anita Marks. This is On the Tee. Stay tuned. The podcast isn't over yet. John spoke with Larry Dornish. Am I pronouncing that? Dornish.
You're good, yeah.
He's the head pro at Muirfield Village, where Memorial is going to be taking place. So stay tuned. We're going to play that for you next. And also on my radio show on 98.7 ESPN, I had a great interview with Peter Jennings, who's, in my opinion, probably one of the top golf handicappers in the world, but definitely in the United States. And we discussed some of the players, some of the golfers we like heading into this week's tournament right here on the Tee.
Welcome back, 98.7 ESPN Radio in New York, On the Tee with Anita Marks. I'm John Mascari, and I'm joined by the golf pro at the center of the universe for half the month of July, the head professional at Muirfield Village, Larry Dornish. Larry, sounds like you're keeping busy, my friend.
It's been a great couple of weeks. Putting on two events back-to-back is quite a challenge, but we've got such a great team here. It's all gone really well. Last week couldn't have been better, except if we would have had 40,000 people around the 18th green when Justin Thomas and Colin Morikawa made those putts. I think the roar would have blown the roof off of Dublin.
No doubt, no doubt. So congratulations, as you said, on a great Workday Charity Open. One down, one to go. Listen, I'm sure it's not rinse and repeat. Why don't you just walk us through some things that are going to be different this week for the Memorial?
Well, we're going to have had a great day yesterday. Walked around the golf course for 6 hours with Jack and our golf course superintendent and the manager looking at the course. Rough is going to be a little higher. Greens will be a little bit firmer. Greens will be a little bit faster. We'll use some pin placements, which are more traditional Memorial Tournament pin placements. And we'll be using some tees that didn't get a lot of use last week, and we'll be lengthening out the golf course and using a few different tees. So some changes, but I'd say the biggest changes are the contestants. You got Rory, DJ, and Tiger. That ought to spice it up a bit.
They said it's one of the greatest field of golfers since the official golf world rankings started. But we know the big story this week is the return of Tiger Woods to the tour, and surely what better place than the Memorial, where he's had so much success in his career. What about Muirfield Village makes Tiger so dangerous there? And as a follow-up, do you feel that having the lack of fans might play into his favor a bit?
I think he drives the ball exceptionally well and usually keeps it in the fairway. But he's such a great iron player. I'm not sure there's been a better iron player in the last couple of decades. He hits it in the middle of every green. He gives him a chance to make every putt. And as Jack's always said, the best way to play Muirfield is fairways and greens, put it in the middle and take your chances with putting. And we all know that for 10 years, I don't think there was a better putter in the world than Tiger Woods. So combine good iron play with great putting and you have a 5-time champion.
Sure enough. Well, you mentioned one of the great things about hitting the fairway at Muirfield, and all the talk on tour has been Bryson DeChambeau and his incredible distance, but more importantly, his incredible accuracy, driving it well over 360 yards 10 times last week. You've seen it up close. You've seen the best up close. What do you expect from him this week?
I assume he'll play well. He's very comfortable here. He's a terrific young man. We have him as a past champion. I had dinner with him when he was about half as big as he is right now. He's really a big man right now. I just watched him hit it off the 10th tee, and he killed it. Knocked it 20, 30 yards past what seemed to be where everybody else was. But I'm not sure that plays to a strength. He'll, by self-admission, needs to work on his wedge play. So, the fact that he could hit driver 9-iron to number 10 is great, but is that going to translate into birdies? I think it'll be a matter of this week. Who hits the best iron shots into the greens? All these players are great with their scoring clubs. And then we'll see who makes some putts.
Well, I'm sure I speak for everyone out there. We're really looking forward to a great tournament once again at Muirfield. The last question I have for you, Larry, probably the most important one. Are the milkshakes that good at Muirfield Village?
All I can tell you is there's a line out the door of players trying to get a milkshake. And every one of them gets more than one. So they've either got family or friends in the area because they're all walking out with several milkshakes. And to answer your question, yes, they are that good.
Yeah, I figured that. Hey, listen, Larry, thank you so much for your time. You're a great friend of the show. You come on with us every year. It's always great to talk to you. I wish you and your staff the absolute best this week. And it's great to catch up with you, my friend. Thank you.
Peter Jennings joins us. Good friend out in Denver. How many Karens have you run into in Denver, Peter?
Anita, it's fun to be on and great to chat again. man, the Karen stuff. I'm not going to touch that. There's somehow this virus has become politicized, which is just crazy to me. I hope we can get everyone healthy and in a better place, and hopefully we'll have sports at some point. But it's a crazy time right now.
Your mouth to God's ears. How's that golf game?
Golf game is pretty good. I was one of the silver linings during quarantine. I was playing quite a bit of golf. I think it's a great way to get outside, and our club had a lot of measures in place to keep us safe, and got down to a 4 index, and now I'm back where I belong, is about a 7 to 8 index. So golf game's decent, but a little less actual golf as I'm focusing on the PGA Tour.
I'm jealous. So Peter created Fantasy Labs, which is just, I'm on that all the time. I have so much fun. And also is part of the Action Network and co-founder of a lot of DFS and in other markets and whatnot. And as I've been praising you all show, I think you're one of the best in the business. And we had an opportunity to meet and get to know each other in our time when you were a part of ESPN. So I'm thrilled to have you on the show. Memorial Thursday, Tiger back in action. Everybody's going to be watching now that Tiger's going to be teeing up. We know that he's won it here 5 times. What is it about this course, Peter, that fits Tiger's game to a T? No pun intended.
Love that. And Anita, thanks for the kind words. And we'll have to talk about your golf game before this is all over, too. I want to hear about that. But yeah, Memorial is an incredible course. Jack's Place, you can see this week, basically, you know, the majority of the top players in the world are here. We had incredible drama last week, and I think the course is going to play a lot different this week. Jack's super proud of it, and I think all the players respect Jack Nicklaus so much. And it's a great course. I mean, Tiger, you look at his course history, and he has incredible course history in so many places because he's the best golfer in the world for so long. So I think, you know, any course suits him pretty well. I think this is definitely a course that suits him better than others. Just scrambling is really important. And if you see some of the highlights from Tiger's career, a lot of them will be here, some incredible flop shots that he's hit, and just the creativity that he has around the greens. And his iron play is a huge part of being successful at Memorial. So I think it's a really good course for Tiger, but I'm not as bullish as I normally would be, given that we haven't seen him for a long time. I know he looked really good in the match, but I'm gonna bank on guys that we have more recent history on than Tiger this week.
Yeah, it's but you know, people love betting on Tiger and they want to see him do well, and you know, he's like at the top of leaderboard come Sunday. It's always fun to watch, right?
Of course.
You know, I'm really curious to get your thoughts on this because and folks listening in, so the Memorial's this weekend. Last week was the Workday Charity Open, and it's being played on the same course, but there's changes that are being made to that course as we speak, right? So tee boxes are moving further back, so it's going to play a lot longer. Greens go from like an 11 to like a 13. You know, the rough is, they're going to let the rough grow out maybe an inch, 2 inches more. So it's going to be a lot more difficult. Now, Morikawa looked great. I love Morikawa. What a great young man. I just really huge fan of his. Justin Thomas looked good, of course, until, you know, he obviously couldn't get the deal done, you know, in the playoff holes. Hovland. So how do you answer someone to say, well, wait a minute, these guys did well last week. Why wouldn't I wager on them this week? Or why wouldn't I use this week?
It's a great question, and you highlighted it perfectly. The course will play differently. It's going to be firmer and faster and all the changes that you mentioned. So I expect scoring to be much lower, or I guess higher, depending on how you look at it. I don't think there'll be as many birdies, and I think it'll be a much more challenging course this week for these guys, where par will be at a bigger premium relative to last week, where it was kind of a birdie fest. So there's that dynamic that you have to wait. But it is still the same course. We've never had this before, and recent form is a huge part of trying to project how golfers are going to do. So not only do you have last week as the recent form, but you also have the same course, albeit it's going to be set up differently. So that's been a challenge in trying to how much to weight that. I think you do weight last week quite a bit, but yeah, it's tricky. And to answer your question pertaining to the players that did well last week, I mean, Colin Morikawa and JT are probably my two favorite golfers on tour. Very bullish on Morikawa. I think he's not only an amazing golfer, but an amazing human and just a huge asset for the PGA Tour. So I was thrilled to see him win. And I'm just such a huge fan. So I still think he's a great setup this week. I think JT's set up really well. I actually would knock down Victor Hovland just a little bit. Victor's been probably, outside of Bryson, maybe even including Bryson, the best tee to green during this COVID swing. But the one bugaboo for Victor Hovland is his chipping and his around-the-green stats. And I think this week, with the new setup with firmer greens, tougher fairways, longer rough, I think scrambling is going to be at a premium. So I would actually knock Victor Hovland down just a little bit. Very bullish on him long-term, but of the guys who did exceptionally well last week, he'd be the guy that I'd say, okay, his scrambling is his one weakness, and I think that's going to be really important this week. So wouldn't surprise me if he went out and played well, because he's literally, I think, number one tee to green on the COVID swing. But the scrambling is so imperative this week that I'll knock him down out of the guys that did really well last week.
You had me at bugaboo. So Peter Jennings joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. All right, so some of the metrics that I looked at in trying to handicap this field this week, okay? Driving accuracy, 11 of the last 17 winners were ranked in the top 10 in driving accuracy. Strokes gained on approach, 11 of the last 23 winners ranked in the top 5 strokes gained on approach. I also looked at par 3 scoring, par 5 scoring, sand save percentage, just to kind of, and also dudes who are good on bent grass. Because here's one. All those metrics I just shared with you, Daniel Berger is up, like he's probably the one golfer who's ranked the highest in all of the metrics that you need to win on this course. Berger is like at the top, right? But dude's horrible on bent grass. So, you know, so instead, so in it, probably for the first 30 minutes of me doing my research, I was like, oh man, I'm all in on Berger. And then I read like just how horrific he is on bent grass. So I have him finishing. I'll probably buy into him on like finishing the top 10. Like, how significant is that? I guess my question is to you is how significant is 13s on bent grass going to be to guys who typically aren't good on bent grass?
Well, first of all, I love all the research. I love the way you're attacking this from an analytical perspective. That's always great to hear, and one of the reasons I'm a huge fan of yours. So I love your passion for golf, and I love that. And I think you're looking at the right things. I think iron play and approach and then finding fairways is the key this week. Pertaining to Berger, he's an interesting one because his 2019 stats are pretty bad, but that's because he had the wrist injury. So I kind of tend to throw those out the window, and you look at his recent form. I mean, he's been unbelievable. Victor Hovland's leading tee to green, but hasn't been putting well. The guy who's been playing the best is either Bryson or Berger. So he checks all the boxes, and then you bring in the grass type thing where there's definitely some signal of that with certain guys. And then in other times the grass type tends to be noisy from a back testing perspective. So I don't know what to do with the grass type. It does give me a little bit of pause, but I certainly would still feel comfortable with Berger. But that, you can say that about basically the top 20 guys here this week, with the exception of maybe Tiger for me. I mean, it's really hard to make a bad argument against all the top end guys. And Tiger, the only reason I'm not going to be financially invested in him, will still be rooting for him, of course, is that he hasn't played in a long time competitively. And historically, that's not good for golfers. But he's Tiger Woods, and he could easily do well. And from a betting perspective, you always have to pay the Tiger tax too. So I'll be fading him there. But Berger's a great golfer, and it's such a compelling top end of the field. Just so many great golfers, which says all the great things about the PGA Tour, which is an amazing place right now.
They certainly are. All right, so let's end on this. I'm going to share with you where I'm going to be spending my money, and you give me thumbs up, thumbs down, and then you share with us the guys that you're really digging heading into Thursday. How's that?
Perfect.
Okay, so I'm putting money on Schauffele and Answer to win. Schauffele, I could get it 25-1. I love Answer heading into this tournament. Get him at 50-1. Top 5, I've got DeChambeau, I've got Webb, and I got Cantlay. Top 10, I got Berger. Top 20, I love Paul Casey at +275. And did you see the video of Finau?
206.
Oh, Can I just say I love Tony Finau. I think he's awesome. So I'm a little biased there. Lucas Glover plus 188 to finish in the top 30. And then here's the thing. Furyk, have you looked at his stats? Dude is
number one
in driving accuracy. Hold on. I got to pull up my notes for this because it's ridiculous. Number one in driving accuracy, number one in greens in regulation percentage, 18th in strokes gained on approach, 45th in strokes gained tee to green. 2-1 to finish in the top 40. Peter, is that not easy money?
That's my favorite bet out of all the ones that you just mentioned. Yes. I had a bunch of money on Furyk last week, and it was devastating betting NDFS. It was devastating to see him miss the cut on the number when I thought minus one was going to be the cut. That was an expensive move on the cut line for me personally, but I love the Furyk bet. Out of everything you mentioned, that's probably my favorite, but starting at the top, Xander, I mean, he does extremely well, at the top. I encourage anyone who's betting, if you have the option to make bets at multiple books, the best thing you can do, especially in outright, is shop for the best price. I've seen actually some better numbers on Xander, but I do like Xander quite a bit, and I expect the line to move. So I think that's pretty sharp. And then Answer is probably my second favorite bet out of the whole group. So ridiculous. He had just an absurd amount of greens at Heritage, including 18 of 18 in his final round. One of the best ball strikers on tour, a name that the average golf fan might not know, but is going to be a household name. And I think 50-1 is a great price on Answer. That's actually a really good number. So like that quite a bit. Top fives, you mentioned Bryson. Bryson to me this week is a little expensive. I like Bryson. I think what he's doing is changing the game. I love his analytical approach. His distance is a huge weapon, but he's the number one expensive guy on DraftKings. Depending where you're betting, he's either a favorite or one of the two or three favorites. And I don't think this necessarily is the best setup for him because of the scrambling. He plays the same length irons and wedges, and I think that suits him really well on his approach game. But Anita, you're a golfer. You know, being around the greens, it's got to be tough to chip with a 7-iron length wedge. And that shows up in the stats for Bryson. The one area he's not great is around the green. So I actually don't love Bryson as a top five bet. I think any week he's a good bet relatively just because he's so good, and he's clearly a top two or three player in the world now. I mean, top five, no matter what. But that would be one bet that I probably would say thumbs down on. Who else did you say at top five? Is that your only top five?
I like Webb, and I like Cantlay.
Can't argue with either of those. I think those are both really interesting. Cantlay looked really good on Sunday too, so that's a strong signal. All these guys are so freaking good.
I'm kind of up. I feel horrible because I could talk about this with you for hours, but I'm kind of up against a break. I'd love to hear. Give me three, four, five of the guys that you really like heading into this week.
Sure. I'll keep it concise. I'm on John Rahm again. Best round, TD Green, Sunday that we've seen in a long time. Bullish on him. Billy Horschel, Jim Furyk, Abraham Answer for sure as well. Those are some of my favorite names this week.
Oh, well, okay. That was easy. You asked about my game. I'm hitting my irons the best I ever have, but something's gone wrong with my driver. Like, the last two rounds I've played, I finished the back nine with my 3-wood off the tee. So I need
a driver. A hook or a slice?
It's not even that. I'm not getting distance out of it. I think it has something to do with my left foot. I'm driving the ball further with my 3-wood than I am my driver. My driver is the best part of my back. I like average 250 a drive, and I'm lucky if my driver gets past. How embarrassing is it? I'm lucky if my driver goes further than DeChambeau's 9-iron.
Well, DeChambeau's hitting the ball farther than
190 yards with his 9-iron. I mean, Peter, come
crazy.
On. I know. He needs to pee in a cup. All right, Peter. I'm going to let you go.
Anita, Thank you so much. This was great.
No, it's so good. It's so good to hear your voice. I'm so glad you're healthy. Your golf game sounds great, and we appreciate your time.